Introduce our main speaker for the evening, Alex from San Diego.
Good evening. My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, there's a lot of people that I love here tonight. Wow. Woo! First of all, Kaya, oh my goodness. You are amazing. Very tough act to follow. Kai and I sort of orbit each other and have the same home group, and you have an amazing foothold in this program, and you are exuberant, and you are bright, and I want what you have. So thank you for being here tonight. Welcome to all of the newcomers. If you're here for the first time or the millionth time, it really doesn't matter. We're glad you're here. I say we with a certain amount of confidence, at least. I remember how hard it is to land in one of these seats and how hard it is to stay. So, welcome. Do I get both of these? Do I get to double fist these? I'm going to crack one of these open right now. Lori, thank you for inviting me to be here tonight and participate in my own recovery. And I've heard that other people are in agreement that it's really warm in here tonight. And middle-aged ladies agree. So I like being introduced. I'm from San Diego, but I am from a little town called Poway. Born and raised, middle-class family. Turns out the struggle is not real. According to my mother, it was. I did not have a big attraction to drugs and alcohol. Oh, with all deference to the traditions, drugs are part of my story. Weird, right? But they landed me in Alcoholics Anonymous and gave me the solution of the 12 steps. So it is part of my story, because that's what I found first. I was 18 years old in the parking lot of Malamar College, and I did my first line, and it answered every question I had ever had. I never fit in, sing along if you know this one, never felt comfortable in my skin. I just didn't fit. But after that, I did. Everything made sense. It was all good. And at the time, I had a boyfriend who had a plan, and I didn't have a plan, so his plan was good. Everyone thought his plan was good, and I fit the uniform, so I was going to go with his plan, and when I told him about my dalliances with drugs, he was very offended by the whole thing, and that was a good enough reason for me to not do it again, but the obsession had already kicked in, and you'll be surprised here, it didn't work out. Bummer. So it was off to the races I went. And I had all the answers here, but then with alcohol, I had oblivion. Even better. I made up for lost time. I was now in my second year at junior college, because I had big goals, and I had a whole new group of friends. I wasn't someone's girlfriend. I had this great social life. I had a job at a record store. Like, things are cool. Like, this is a good place to be. I actually met a really nice boy who I fell madly in love with. He was good, and he was kind, and he was smart, and he was funny, and he was handsome and way too good for me. And, it broke my heart, but I don't know how you respond to vulnerability and fear. But I like self-righteous anger. It's kind of my jam. And I was horrible to this incredibly kind, loving human being. And, the shame that had built up through my entire life was right at the forefront at that point. And the day that we broke up, I can manufacture the feeling of that heat in my chest and the knots in my stomach and physically feeling like I'm choking on my words, because the fact of the matter is a relationship was going to get in the way of my using and drinking. And so was school and jobs and family. So everything went by the wayside. I alienated my friends because at first it looked like, I'm just party girl drinking. I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. Which one did I open? That one? I'll see your beer bong and raise your cake stand. You little bitch. You could hear me coming. I had to be big and loud and have a lot of bravado, because if you didn't see me, I might not exist. I was so ashamed of who I was. I really didn't know who I was, but whatever it wasn't good enough. I knew that. Nothing quite seemed to fix that except for drugs and alcohol. Oblivion is my favorite. I'm a blackout drinker. Like, it was really cute when I got to rehab, and you know, they ask, like, so how many times have you blacked out? Like, really? I was supposed to keep count? No, that didn't happen. You know, because I drank before, I drank during, and I drank after. I drank by myself. I drank with you. I drank everywhere. You know, I went through a series of jobs. You know, I was really good at quitting before I got fired. The first time I got fired was from a restaurant. Now, if you're getting fired because you're drunk at a restaurant, like, those are serious goals right there. So I went to work at the restaurant next door, and I got fired from there. Everybody's got to be good at something. You know, I was just floating through life, and somehow I managed, by luck, landing an on-air gig at a local radio station on a local music show. This is an incredible opportunity for something that I really wanted to do. And it afforded me a lot of different opportunities. It afforded me access to a lot of music venues, a lot of free alcohol, and musicians. Trifecta! And it was great, because now it just seemed like it's a good time. What I'm doing is a good time. And I got to do some great stuff. I experienced a lot of things. I learned how to, you know, produce a record album. I went on tour with my boyfriend's band. Oh, it's also when I got my DUI. Which was super, super fun. His band had been booked to play at, raise your hand if you know this one, Winston's 2 in Lakeside. There are enough heads nodding, like, right on. And following them back to their studio, the lead singer's girlfriend is in my passenger seat, and I didn't turn quickly enough when the light turned green. And I get pulled over, and I roll down the window, officer, I'm lost, I was following people, I just need to find the 5 freeway. And there was that glimpse for just a second where he's like, oh, okay. Until she leans over and goes, what the fuck are you pulling her over? I'm so fucked. I'm so fucked. So I get out of the car, give him my license. I'm a little nervous because I have a whole lot of drugs in my purse. The 2 drinks wasn't the problem so much as that. But fortunately, she may have had the maneuver to get me out of the car, but she threw such a tantrum on the side of the road that they left her ass at Taco Bell along with my car and threw my purse in the trunk and left it there. They didn't search anything. I mean, I got, like, the white glove treatment from San Diego's Finest. I was very, very fortunate. They threw me in the drunk tank and didn't put anyone in there with me the whole night. It was quite the treatment. And I wasn't going to do anything. I got a DUI. Like, they make it very clear when they take your license. They staple it to a piece of paper telling you you have no driver's license anymore. But that doesn't stop me from driving. I drove around for years without a license, drunk and not caring, because it just didn't matter. It didn't matter to me. My life held no value. I was convinced of that. There was very little that I knew, but that people were disposable because I know I was. I held no value to anyone. I didn't keep anyone close to me for very long. Actually, I just didn't let anybody close to me. You'll be surprised to hear that I lost the gig at the radio station. Generally frowned upon when you're completely smashed on the air. Ranting about how the ex-boyfriend left for a 19-year-old. Keeping it classy, San Diego. Yeah, it was good. I got 86 from a couple of the finest venues in San Diego. But that didn't stop me. I was living in Pacific Beach at the time with my super high-functioning childhood friend, and I'm not being sarcastic about that. Like, one night, I was headed off to the bar again, and I invited her to come with me, and her response was, I can't. Like, you're not shackled to your bed. Like, what do you mean you can't? She's like, well, I have homework, and then I have to go to work tomorrow. Like, I don't see these things as a problem. Like, just because I don't have them, but she did these things. She was kind of a grown-up. I was not at all. At that point, you know, my life existed in a world the size of a bathroom. I drank from morning till night. Like, one of my yets was, I don't drink in the morning yet. And the first time I did, I can still see a friend of mine cracking open a cold beer and handing it to me. Like, it's right there. And it occurred to me, like, there's no turning back after this. And I drank that beer, and by God, I did feel better. It was the way to go. And there was nothing stopping me. Then I was drunk 24/7. And it didn't matter what it was. It had to be something, anything. You know, my roommate would get up and leave for work at 6 o'clock every morning. And because I generally hadn't slept the night before, that's when I got up, closed all the blinds in our apartment, turned on the stereo, and just started drinking. I very rarely left my house. There was no need to. If I could have alcohol right there, that's all I needed. I did have a friend at the time. She was my partner in crime, quite literally. And we used to go on a lot of dope runs together. And we decided that we were going to move to Florida. Because all good decisions start in Florida. And I packed up my apartment. I lived on a boat for a little while, which was super rad. Boat people are fucking weird. But there was no rent, so why not? But I packed everything up, and I went back to my parents' house in Poway. And I was unemployable. I wanted to die, but I wasn't ambitious enough to kill myself. Every day, I would come to and think, shit, I have to do this again. I can remember with incredible clarity, and I hope to God I never forget this, the sick feeling that I lived with constantly. I hurt from the inside out. We talk about the soul sickness here. I was so sick. I couldn't, bless you, understand that there was anything that was worth pursuing in this life except for getting drunk. It was my everything. I came home from a failed dope run one day to Mom and Dad's house, and spread out on the kitchen counter were all the empty bottles and cans that I thought I'd so cleverly stashed in my bedroom. And my mom, who never got over a fucking thing in her life, so you know my mom. Or, like, we all had the same mom. It's more like it. You know, my mom taught me that, you know, love looks a lot like pity. They can't be mad at you if you're sick. Zero coping skills. Zero. She was threatened by every woman on the planet. She kept me from my father's side of the family. Like, she was just a barrel of laughs. And so she was actually kind of enjoying being the long-suffering mother of an alcoholic. Look at this. And she told me that I needed to go for an evaluation at what was then the Scripps McDonald's Center. And I went, and I lied, and I really thought that I fooled them on this one. Like, I haven't used drugs in 15 months. Like, pick a random month. 15 months! 15 months, and I haven't had a drink in 2 weeks. Great. The counselor looked at me and was very kind and sent me on my way because I wasn't willing to stay. It was very clear I was not done. Then a few days later, Mom and Dad took the dogs for a walk and came back with two of Poway's sheriffs with them. I was being pink carded because I never did any of the stuff that you're supposed to do, like an 18-month program when you get a DUI. Like, why would I bother to do that? That's like an El Cajon and inconvenient. And then when I was really paranoid, like, there might be drug testing. Oh, my God, I can't go there. And I was told that if I did not appear in court tomorrow, that they were going to come back and arrest me. So now I'm accountable to mom and dad and the dogs. So I went to court. My defense was, I shit you not, I don't remember signing these forms. Because apparently I had found some guy that I sold dope to who was a lawyer. And he filled out these forms and he submitted them for me. And I really didn't remember. Like, that was a solid defense. I don't remember. I really don't. And yeah, that was not good. But then a week later, because I'm still not going to take care of any of this wreckage, why would I? I came home to yet another haul of empty bottles and cans, including the bottles of cooking wine that were in the house. My parents couldn't have fathomed that I drank all the Listerine, too. I mean, every ounce of alcohol, because I had to. I had no power of choice when it came to drink. I had to drink. I had no options. I could not exist. I could not breathe without alcohol. And at that moment, I was so tired. And I was so sick. And I don't know if I was actually done, but stay with me, kids. I walked over to the landline, and I took out the phone book. So I really went the extra mile to get myself a bed at the McDonald's Center. I got a bed that was going to be available 3 days later. I didn't want to go to detox because then they might know that I was doing drugs. Like, I really, like, this, the drugs are a problem because they're illegal. Of course, my legal problems had to do with alcohol, but that's a whole other story. Drugs are bad. And I was just going to clean up, and I was going to be able to drink like a lady, like I ever. So I detoxed at home, super fun. Don't recommend it. And my mother's like feeble attempt at, you know, being sympathetic. You're going to have this whole new life. And I remember screaming at her, "I'm never going to have fun ever again. My life is over." And I really meant it. But my parents had cleaned out whatever they thought they could find, but they did not find the bottle of whiskey that I kept under my pillow. So I drank that, and I can still see my own reflection sitting on the floor, surrounded by boxes, in my bedroom at my parents' house at 26 years old, and I hated myself so entirely. I was so disgusted with what I saw and who I was. And, you know, I, like so many of us, I felt alone my entire life, alone in a room of 1,000 people, but I understood why no one would want to be near me. And, you know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, that was it. That was it right there. I had no idea what would lie ahead of me, but something had to be done. So the next 2 days were super bitchin'. My sobriety date is February 23rd of 2000. I have not found it necessary to pick up since then. I went to the McDonald's Center. Mom and Dad drove me. And they didn't get to take me to college, but they took me to rehab. And the building has since been leveled. But I remember walking up those stairs, and I can still see it, and saying to my parents, "Let's hurry up and get this over with." And they checked me in, took my vitals, told them the same bullshit answers I did before, and they took me up to my room. You know, I've got a mattress that's wrapped in plastic. This is super rad. That would have been helpful previously. But, see, it's funny because you know. And at that moment, my new roommate came breezing in. She was like all of like 5 foot nothing with long red hair and so energetic. And the counselor said to me, she's like, "This is Alex. She just got here and she's really scared." I'm like, "You fucking bitch." I mean, I didn't say anything. The words got caught in my throat, but I'll show you who's fucking scared. because I was terrified. And they were very kind, and they let me sleep that night. I had horrible, horrible nightmares. And a whole new life started. The next day was a Tuesday, and we did things like go to group all day, where you talk about your feelings and what your triggers are. And they asked me, like, what are your triggers? Consciousness, like... It fucks with me. I don't do so well. And questions, are you a social drinker or an isolated drinker? Why are you still here? Then I would be an isolated drinker. Like, I didn't understand any of this. And everyone seemed to have, like, this, like, secret code, like, this different language. And everybody knew each other's names. And I felt like a little kid on the playground in elementary school with no friends. And I hated everybody. I hated everybody. The next day was a Wednesday, and there was a large meeting at the McDonald's Center, and there was, you know, a big table. I think, if anyone correct me if I'm wrong, the podium was, like, up on risers, and everyone had, like, these cool slogans, and people were talking about shit that I had done that I swore I was going to take to the grave with me. And they're saying it into a microphone. What the fuck is wrong with you? I don't understand. And then this tall, elegant woman named Hillary got up, and she shared, and she talked about drinking all the cooking wine in her house. I went, oh, my God. She's hot. Maybe being an alcoholic's not so bad. But I heard her, and I heard my story over and over and over again. And I remember, you know, for all the newcomers in the room, standing up to introduce myself, like, the room stopped. Like, saying my name was the most important fucking thing that night. But I remember that fear and that anxiety, and it's very, very real. So if you have the balls to stand up and introduce yourself tonight as a newcomer, fuck yes. I applaud you. Now, we all applaud you. So I did my 28 days at the McDonald's Center and talked about my feelings. And I was told I should go to a recovery home. And then I talked to people after meetings. You know, someone who's got like 55 days who's still on restriction is totally who you want to talk to about going to a recovery home. That was my source of advice. I'm like, fuck no, I'm not going to do that. Maybe I'll go to a sober living. But before I could do that, I got out on a Monday. The night before, a boy at another meeting hit on me. He was very pretty, and he was a musician, so it's on. And I asked him to give me a token. Like, I think about this now, like, oh, my God. Why did my sponsor still sponsor me after this? God. And then I made a super, super rad choice. We went from the meeting, and we went down to the Casbah in Middletown, which was my stomping ground. It was so smart. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like drinking. I didn't drink. But I was so uncomfortable. And I couldn't tell you why. And I think it's page 101. We'll tell you why. Because I had no business being there. I had no business being there. And let's be very clear. I wasn't doing anything different. This was exactly what I always did before. Yeah, so I didn't drink. The boy didn't work out. I know you're shocked. So weird. And I eventually did find my way to a sober living. It was at 43rd and Mead in City Heights. It's a lot nicer now. So much nicer now. And on my way there, I went down a like one block street the wrong way. And I got pulled over. Keep in mind, I had never cleaned up any of the wreckage from my previous DUI. I did not get the white glove treatment this time. I got pulled over. I explained everything. You know, like I think I just had 60 days and like dropped my chip on the ground. He's like, hope you don't fall off the wagon. Thanks, dude. And he didn't think I was very funny because he searched my entire car. And I'm sitting on the curb in City Heights, looking good. And I said, I'm so glad you're not the guy who stopped me when I got my DUI. Not funny. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. And yeah, I went to my summer home, Las Colinas. And this time, they were going to keep me for a while. They took my clothes and gave me county-issued underwear. What the fuck is going on? And I heard my name. Before they did that, I heard my name. I'm like, are my mom and dad here? I'm going to get eaten alive here. This is awesome. No, we're here to take your clothes. Fuck you. What? No, you don't do that. No, not me. Not here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. So, jail sober. Super fun. Super, super fun. But one of the things that did happen while I was in the tank waiting to be picked up, because my parents did post bail. They never did well in Al-Anon. My mother might have had to take some responsibility for her own actions. So I just, why do that? But there was a woman that I spoke to while I was in there, and I told her, you know, it's a lot better this time than the last time I was here. And she asked me why. I said, well, last time I wasn't drunk enough, and I was coming down, and it just sucked. And she told me that she was, yeah. That's what she had been busted for, and she was coming down. It was going to be a real bad crash. And I talked to her about this little thing we got here. And I don't know. I don't know if she ever made it here, but we had our own little meeting there. Like Kaya said, you don't know what you have to offer. You don't know what the world is going to present to you. I felt a semblance of self-worth at this point. So after that, I did go to that really swanky sober living. And one of the things that I learned there was, I had to ask for rides because now it was like way out in the open that I don't have a license and I can't really like get this by on anybody. And, I had the good fortune of being surrounded by some really good men when I first got sober, some really good men, who explained to me very clearly why they wouldn't hug me, why it was important to shake my hand, and how I should be treated, and what I should expect. And I called one of them, asking for a ride to a meeting, and he asked me, did you call this person? Did you call this person? Did you call this person? And the answer was no to all of them. And he said, okay, you start calling them, and if absolutely none of them will take you to the meeting, then I will. But that's who you need to call first. So I learned how to reach out. I started calling people because I had no car. I'm in not yet gentrified City Heights. I cleaned that house from stem to stern. And I discovered that I have the ability to incite change in my own life. One of the great things, though, I moved one of the beds to vacuum. There was a Valium on the floor. I vacuumed around that bitch for about 45 minutes. Not an exaggeration. And I finally called someone, and they said, well, just flush it down the toilet. Really? Is that what I should do? Yeah, that seems difficult. Someone came over and did it for me. 45 minutes, dude. But I started calling people. Like, the 500-pound phone was not my problem. And there were... Some people were happy to hear from me. Some people weren't, because I rolled in with a target on my forehead. I'm fucking new. Like there was no missing that I was a newcomer. Like not at all. Because I still felt that way. Like if you don't see me, then I don't exist. If you don't see me, I don't have any worth. And I need you to tell me who I am and what I like and what I'm worth. And I was reaching out to people, and there was someone who, before we got off the phone, she said, thank you for 12-stepping me today. And she had an ass load of time. And I've never forgotten that. She's my best friend. She's right there. I did not stay in that super swanky sober living for very long. I did go to a super swanky sober living in Encinitas after that. where the women were twice as crazy. bad shit, crazy. But at that point, my life revolved around recovery. I ate, slept, and shat 12-step programs entirely. I had a commitment almost every day of the week. At 90 days, there was a World Service Convention for another program, Cocaine Anonymous, and a bunch of people with time said, come with us. And they took me to Arizona. Those sick fuckers threw me in a car and took me to Arizona. And I had the best time. And I saw recovery in action. I saw people with so much time. Like they say, you know, find someone who has what you want. I don't know what I want. I was asked what I wanted out of this program when I was in rehab. I don't want to run out of gas anymore. Like, that's all I wanted. I didn't know. I mean, what's available to me? I mean, I didn't even know how to ask that question. And the closing meeting for that convention, I stood in a circle with hundreds and hundreds of other people in recovery and said the Serenity Prayer. There's my goosebumps. And I burst into tears. And I had no idea why. But something was happening. Something was changing. I was told things would get different. And they, oh, did they. Shit got weird. And then it got different. You know, my life started to change. My relationships began to change. One of the things, I love this example. There was a guy that I was dating at the end of my using and drinking who I thought I, like, so cleverly hid all this from. And I called him from rehab. And he was really sad, and he felt very guilty. And he had no idea. And I worked overtime to make sure you didn't see what was going on. That was a lot of work. And we eventually started dating again, and he got to know me all over again, which was this very strange prospect for me. And he invited me to go to Northern California to visit his family. And I called my sponsor and said, can I do this? And she's like, yeah, you know, find meetings, call me every day, and go. And I went. He actually looked up meetings in the area for me, because they would go with the schedule that because his mom had a whole thing going. I was on tour. And shut up. So fast. I only have a year. What the hell? Okay. Anyway, so he took me to the meeting. He waited in his car. And then afterwards, he came up and he helped clean up the meeting. And I called my sponsor and I said, wow, he's being so sweet. And she's like, well, hey, maybe he was always this sweet. You were kind of an asshole. Okay. So let's jump ahead because I got 10 minutes. So let's see. Oh, okay. Because of my DUI, I wanted to work with kids. That's what I wanted to do before I started drinking. That's what I really wanted to do. And it does not go over well if you have a criminal record. So I had to file for exemption with the state of California. And while doing that, I worked in a South Park at Lovely Santos Coffee House, one block away from a recovery home. And I was going to maintain my anonymity there. Like, that's what I'm going to do. Until one guy walks in while everyone's getting coffee before the meeting, goes, hey, don't I know you? Don't you go to meetings in La Jolla at the McDonald's Center? Anonymity. Sir, I'll be with you in a moment. I ended up going to that men's recovery home, and that's where I met the woman who is my sponsor now. As she tells the story, she was up there being an asshole. Her words, not mine. Grandstanding about something. And I'm like, oh, I want what she has. And she took me through the steps bare-boned. Bare-boned. And it changed everything because I had, you know, kind of tiptoed through the steps. I worked them to the best of my ability at the time, but we sat down on her couch and she asked me if I was powerless over alcohol, had it made my life unmanageable, do I concede to my innermost self that I am alcoholic? And the answer was absolutely yes. And it's the only one that you have to do perfectly. I keep hearing that time after time. No one can make that decision for you. I know to my core that I am alcoholic. And, you know, drinking's always going to be an option. Like, shit people say at meetings that makes me crazy. Drinking's not an option. Mazel tov. It is for me, very much so. And I am responsible for living a life that makes drinking the least attractive option. We went through the steps. I did a super thorough fourth and fifth step with her. And I would like to say, I think we do newcomers real disservice by saying, you have to do your four step. Like, calm the fuck down. 8 and 9's way scarier. If you've heard anything anyone said here, 4 and 5 is really not a big deal. Writing it down, putting it on paper, yeah. And seeing I have a part in things, and I have the ability to incite change in my life. I've made amends to so many people. There are some people who wouldn't accept them. There are people who wouldn't sit down with me, who wouldn't see me. There was one person who came and met me and said, I just wanted to see your face so I could tell you to fuck off and die. And I'm okay. I didn't have to drink. Somewhere along the way, the whole God thing, I do have a problem with some of the verbiage in the book. I don't think that we're always necessarily living in God's world, and shit does happen by mistake. I could not believe in a God that would allow things like genocide and cancer. I think the human existence is a very difficult one. We feel everything. We hurt people. People hurt us. And to try and align myself with something that is giving to others. The most important thing I've learned to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is give to others, to show up and be of service, and not just in these rooms. One of the things along the way, like the whole God thing, like for me, it brought about visions of religion. Like the greatest atrocities in human history have been committed in the name of God and religion, so go fuck yourself. I don't want to have anything to do with this. But the definition of a spiritual has nothing to do with God or religion. It matters dealing with the soul, things that are non-material. God is just shorthand. My God feels sad for all of us. My God sat with me when I held my mother when she took her last breath. It's hard to remain angry at someone who dies in your arms. God sat with me when my brother died of brain cancer. He had brain cancer that was supposed to kill him in 13 months. He lived 8 years. The human will is fucking magnificent. Use it for good or evil. I think you have the power. He looked so tired when he took his last breath. But I got to be there. Like that's the thing. All of these things add up to being present. When I get out of my own way, all of my character defects are still here, in full effect. Self-righteous anger, still my jam. Bitches get shit done, just saying. But to show up and to be present and to not make it about me. And I learned how to do that by making coffee, by bringing cakes, by cleaning up butt cans, by answering phones, by answering my phone. We live in a world where we don't have to call anybody. And, I got sober before there was caller ID. I didn't know who was calling. And you didn't know when I was calling you. all of these things have led to me being someone I'm okay with. Like, really okay with. Shit goes wrong all the time. Ask my husband. I've been married for 11 years. My husband is not one of us. He is an extremely high-functioning human being. Like, he got the book, The Instructions to Life, and he read it from cover to cover, and he took notes, and he asked questions, and I got it and was like, front, back, good. Any pictures? No? Let's go. The most dysfunctional thing my husband has ever done is marry me. It's funny because it's true. We have a child. She is adopted. I became a mother in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first time I ever laid eyes on my child was at a Saturday morning women's meeting. And long story short, several months later, we were standing in front of a judge asking to be her parents. And we were woefully overconfident about being able to parent a child who was undoubtedly going to have special needs because of in utero drug and alcohol exposure and severe neglect for the first 2 years of her life. But she's my baby. And she's the greatest adventure and the greatest challenge. And I get to be that mom. You know, motherhood doesn't look anything like what I envisioned. Like this, I was a little angry for a little while. My husband and I did suffer a miscarriage a year after we got married and learned that we weren't going to be able to have children without help from medical marvels, which is something that doesn't work for me. And I was really pissed. And, you know, I did what I was supposed to do, and now you fuck me? Thanks, God. But there is more. Sometimes I wonder if there is a plan, and I just need to get on board. But, you know, I have a purpose now. My primary purpose is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the alcoholic who still suffers, and that goes in these rooms and beyond, because there's a lot more of us out there than there are in here. And you never know. You never know. You know, I think the most valuable tradition is attraction rather than promotion, because I'm a huge asshole. Like, I will barrel through this life and show no consideration for anyone, but I've learned how to do things differently in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am aware of my character defects. I regularly do an inventory. Jesus, damn it. You know, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a friend, I'm a sponsor, I'm a daughter. My father lives with my husband and daughter and I. And if you had told me that when I first got sober, like, you can keep that elsewhere. That's a plan for somebody else, not me. I get to be present for people. I get to care for myself in ways that... I'm a grown-up. I'm a responsible grown-up who is responsible for a little person and for not being an asshole. Funny thing, I actually am religious. I'm really fucking religious. I know, so weird, right? I believe in mercy and justice and truth. You know, this adventure has taken me to Central America and back again. I do service work outside of these rooms as well as in. I pray every day. It looks a lot like me just talking to myself, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. I have incredible sponsees. I have incredible friends. Like, I'm looking out. I'm going to cry if I look. I have been loved and carried and supported through tremendous loss. I don't do this alone, ever. Shit goes horribly, horribly wrong. And this is where I come. The morning after the miscarriage, my best friend came and picked me up and took me to a women's meeting. Not because I'm such a good AA-er, but I was going to go to a place where I was going to be loved and supported and people spoke my language. You know, when things go wrong, this is where I come, and I've never been let down by the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Never. I mean, it's not Well People's Anonymous, don't get me wrong. No one's on a pedestal. Please don't put anyone on a pedestal. And there are some sick fucks around here like no other. But as a whole, this fellowship has never let me down. They have taught me how to love and to care and to be present. And I have a life that is beyond anything I ever could have imagined. I just didn't want to run out of gas. And, you know, for a little over 19 years, I've not found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug or do damage to anyone. And that's a miracle. You know, one of the things for me, when I got here, my skin was gray, my eyeballs were yellow, I was bloated, and I had rotting tissue in my sinuses. Super hot. And I eventually did have to have sinus surgery, and I was left at a follow-up appointment with the sinus surgeon with a file about this thick, and it's all about me. And they left me waiting there, so I started flipping through it, and there's like very technical medical details of my surgery, which was super gross. And then at the end, there was a letter from the referring physician. It said, Alexandra has a long history of drug and alcohol abuse from which she has recovered. So if you don't believe this works, I have a doctor's note. Thank you for giving me a place to come tonight. Thank you for being here and allowing me to participate in my own recovery. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart.